We warmly welcome Lydian as our speaker for this Monday Night Crew Miracles meeting on January 26. When you speak, it is considered implied consent to have your voice and your share recorded and posted on oafootsteps.com as a podcast. To preserve your anonymity, please only use your first name or an alias when you share.
Thanks. Lydian, compulsive overeater. And I want to thank Olivia for asking me to share today. It's good to see some friends in here, that's for sure. This program has saved my life more than once, and for that I'm truly, truly grateful. Today is a little odd as far as eating is concerned. For breakfast, I had water. For a snack, I had some Gatorade Light. For lunch, I had more water. And then for a snack, I had more Gatorade Light. And then for dinner, I just had some Gatorade Light. So you could probably guess what's going to happen tomorrow to me. So, but I tell you, look, anytime that I'm not eating or anything like, it's like I've lost a friend. I mean, I am like so sad and bummed. And I think on some level, it's almost like being humbled a little bit. And it's kind of a good thing for me. Let's see. I'll just start out. Look, I came to OA through Alcoholics Anonymous. My sponsor is Michael B. And drugs and alcohol just totally overshadowed anything, any kind of other issues that I had. I was shooting up Seconals and Percodans when I was 16 years old. I drank all the time, and it wasn't until I got sober that things started. I started becoming aware of things, and I just basically look. I belong to my home group. There are men in there that have lost hundreds and hundreds of pounds, and I cannot pretend that I'm anything like that because that's not my story. I mean, they are truly miracles, that's for sure. And I but my story is totally different, and it's the only story that I have. So here it goes. I got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, and once I started doing that, I've started getting information about the program. One thing that my home group does is they go over to this guy's house and they have exercise. There's this book called Living Sober. And in that book, there were all these little things that the co-founders prescribed to help you stay away from the first drink. So, and I thought my AA home group invented all that stuff because I didn't know anything about the literature. So anyway, we were doing exercise. I changed all my friends, and there was another chapter in there that dealt with staying sober. And what they prescribed was eating sugar to stay away from the first drink. And I was told that I could do anything that I want just as long as I didn't pick up the first drink. And I ran with that. And as a result of doing that, I mean, I've always loved sugar. I've always loved sugar. And I've been like, I haven't had Halloween candy for a little over 20 years. And that is an absolute miracle. I just cannot believe that I haven't had that kind of craving for a while, but anyway, and then what happened was I started gaining weight, and that was the problem. When you eat a lot of sugar and the whole day is open for eating, it starts presenting problems. And it started presenting problems for me. I developed a hiatal hernia and GERD disease, and I currently have that now. And I'm not really sure if that has anything to do with compulsive overeating, but I don't have to take medication for it, which is a good thing. But so what happened for me was once I got sober, I started gaining weight and I started looking for ways to control my eating. And I've done like the cabbage soup diet several times. I've done fruit fast. There was a place here in LA called Lindora. I don't know if it's still around, but I would go there and I would get these vitamin B shots and eat their protein bars. And the problem with all that stuff is that I could do it for a little while. And then what would happen is I would get the thought like, well, maybe I can have like just
Right,
a
5 minutes, Lillian.
every now and then, you know? And what would happen is that would set up this craving and I would just be off and running again. I have never been able to stick on the same food plan until I got into OA. And I really didn't think that that was going to work. And if you're new, the good news of this program is that you can come up with a food plan and you can stay on it. You know, my experience with dieting has been horrible. So what I would do is I would lose weight, I would stay on that diet for a little while, and then I would start eating again, and then I'd gain all the weight back. My top weight was 210 pounds, and I'm currently at like 155 right now, and I've been maintaining that weight for probably about 15 years, and I've never been able to do that. And it wasn't until recently that I started buying new clothes because I really felt like if I bought new clothes that fit me, that it was just a matter of time before I'm going to gain the weight again, and I'm not going to be able to fit in those clothes, and I'm going to have to buy clothes that are going to fit me, you know? So anyway, I'm trying all these things. I went to HOW OA. And from there, I went from 210 pounds to 140 pounds. And I was absolutely miserable. And at the time, I didn't have a conscious contact with a higher power. And, you know, the book talks about this thing. They talk about this peculiar mental twist. And I have that with alcohol and I have that with food. I can come up with like be on the HOW OA food plan. And just the inkling of a thought of maybe I should try this, maybe this will work. And I'm back off and running again. And what happened for me was I lost all that weight in OA. I was walking around miserable. I looked horrible. I looked like I was in a, you know, just starving, you know? And an old timer in my AA group came up to me and said, "Are you okay? Are you sick?" And I go, "No, I'm just going to OA." How OA? He goes, "Oh, I know what your problem is. You tonight you drink a chocolate shake and you eat a cheeseburger and you call me tomorrow and I guarantee you're going to feel a lot better." And I had no mental defense against that, and I immediately did that. I felt a lot better, and I was off and running again, and I ended up gaining more weight. You know. What happened for me was I've lost a couple obsessions. One was smoking, and the way I did that was through prayer. And what would happen is I would pray at night to have cigarettes removed from me, and then the next day I would go to my meetings. And I'm back in the day when we could smoke at the meetings, I would go find somebody and I'd bum a cigarette for somebody. And then I'd go out and buy a pack of cigarettes and I'm smoking again. But the whole time I'm praying at night to have that removed. And then just one day, what happened for me was I woke up, I didn't have money for cigarettes, and I've hadn't had cigarettes for almost 35 years now, and or 30 years. And so I knew that my problem, by being in program, I knew that my problem, the solution had to be prayer. So I started praying about my food and wanting help for that. But the way it's funny because the way it worked for me was my prayers really didn't get answered until I started talking, until I asked somebody else for help. And that was my sponsor, Michael B. He was the only person that I knew in OA. And, you know, I called him up and I said, I need help with my food, you know? And he goes, "Okay, I'll help you. But what I want you to do is I want you to call me every day and I want you to tell me exactly what you're eating." So I would call him up and I'd say, "Yeah, today I had like I had a bag of Doritos, like a couple cookies, and a couple juice boxes. And I mean, this is the way I was eating, But what it did was it set a precedence for me at the very beginning, to be honest with my sponsor. So today I can tell him anything that I eat, and I think it had to do with me being honest in the beginning. And then eventually what we did was we started getting a food plan. One thing that I did, like in the morning, I always
That's
skip
10
breakfast.
minutes, Lydia.
Thank you. I always skip breakfast. And what I did was I would, once I skipped breakfast, I would go, well, I'm going to make up for that because I didn't have breakfast. So I would eat a lot at lunch and dinner, And what Michael recommended, he goes, why don't you have just a piece of fruit? Why don't you do that, for breakfast? And so what I did was I started following his directions and I started coming up with very simple ideas, like 3 meals a day, a snack in between lunch and breakfast and lunch, and a snack in between lunch and dinner. And then I also started identifying some things that were alcoholic for me. And those are, that's sugar and white flour. And there's a couple examples in the big book. There's that example of they talk about alcohol being like touching a hot stove. And you get burned, and then like a couple weeks pass by, and you go, maybe I can touch that stove again, and not get burned, And alcohol and food were exactly like that for me. Now, there's another analogy near the end of that, which talks about a hot stove too, and or flame. They say that, and I've had this experience that I have a daily reprieve contingent upon the maintenance of my spiritual condition. And whenever I'm confronted with white flour or sugar, I repel from it like a hot flame. And it never used to be like that. It used to be like, maybe I can touch it this time and it won't burn me, But and the maintenance of my spiritual condition is pretty simple, too. I have this idea that God's will for me is to be sober with alcohol and sober with food. And in the book, it tells me that I can use my will all I want to align myself with God's will. And I don't know really if that's God's will for me, but it's just something that I believe, So what I can do is I can do anything that I can with my willpower to try to make that come to fruition. And what I do is I call my sponsor every day. I check in my food. I have a meeting that I go to and that I have a commitment there. I sponsor people. And for me, that's really the whole deal. I've had experiences by going through the 12 steps of the program and I've had a spiritual awakening. And I had to be very honest about that because I tell you, when I first got into the program, they started talking about this God thing. And in fact, they said I was going to a book study, and they say in the book, the only thing that can help me and save me from that peculiar mental twist, that me touching a hot stove, is a conscious contact with with God. And I wasn't really sure how that was going to work for me because I didn't believe in God. And the beautiful thing about this program is that I didn't have to believe in any preconceived ideas of God. I didn't have to believe in Jesus. I didn't have to believe in Buddha. I didn't have to believe in Muhammad. I didn't have to believe in any of those things. I was told that I can make up a God of my own understanding, and that's what I did. And that worked for a little while, but what happened for me was I started becoming honest about this, and I started telling everybody that I know that hey, I'm just pretending like I believe in God. That's what you told me to do, and that's what I'm doing. I made up something, And I was starting to At this time, I was still having problems with food. I was having problems with money. I was looking for something to fix me because I didn't have drugs and alcohol anymore. So what I did was I went through the steps again and I had a spiritual awakening. And it was very simple. You know, like I was talking to the guy that was taking me through the steps, and he told me that I was telling him that when I go to meetings that I feel like I'm doing the right thing and that that everything is going to be all right. And I feel like that every time I leave a meeting, and I'll feel like that when I leave this meeting tonight. And he said to me, he goes, "Well, you know, your meetings are kind of like Bill's cathedral experience, you know." And if you remember, like in Bill's story, he talks about being in Winchester Cathedral, wandering outside, and then he reads this tomb and being much moved, and then wandering outside and reading this tombstone inscription.
15 minutes.
Thank you. So I have 5 minutes left, right? Okay. Thank you. All right. So he, what he said, you know, and then later on, Bill talks about his cathedral experience. But what happened for me was, you know, when I left that guy's house, I felt something happen to me, and I wasn't really sure what it was, but I've experienced it before in my life. There's been moments in my life where I felt calm and peaceful, and I felt like I was part of the universe, you know. And then I would get an obsession to drink, or an obsession to eat something, or obsession to, you know, fill in the blank, you know, looking for something to fix me. So when I got home, I told him, I think I had, I said, I think something happened to me on the way home. And he goes, "Yeah, when it happened to me, I was at an AA convention, and I kept going back to my room saying, 'Are you still with me?' And I had that same experience. I didn't want this feeling to leave me." And that was the really the gist of my spiritual awakening. It was a realization of this peaceful feeling that I've always had in my life. I just didn't know what to call it. And I have tools today to deal with that. And it is so important for me to keep in contact with that. Now, for me, like all the prayers that I know are from the big book, and it seems to me that they all talk about one thing. They talk about peace and serenity, you know, like the serenity prayer, you know, the third step prayer, grant me the serenity, or I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as I will. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help. And when I'm out of self, and when I'm doing the program and working the steps in my life, I have this comfort. I have this peace with me. And I'll read you something out of the 12 and 12. And this is kind of my barometer for when I'm not at peace. It says here that, let's see. It is a spiritual axiom that every time we are disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something the matter with us. If somebody hurts us and we are sore, we are wrong also. And you know, I tell you, I live by that today. It's a barometer for whether I have a spiritual contact with that peace. And I'll give you an example. Just recently, you know, my wife and I gave our son and daughter like $500 for Christmas, right? So my son and daughter thanked my wife, but they didn't thank me. And I got so bent out of shape about that, you know? And I remembered the spiritual axiom, and I remember that if any time that I'm upset, it doesn't matter whether they thank me or not. If I'm upset, there's something the matter with me. And what happens is if I let that build up long enough, I'm going to eat again, or I'm going to drink again. There's no doubt about that. If I let resentments and fear and anger boil to the point that the only solution for me is to eat, I'll eat, you know? So I realized this, and I went to my daughter and son and said, "Look, I realize that I am the problem with this. I have some issues regarding this." And the issue was that I have this insecurity about, you know, my wife takes care of Christmas gifts. And what she does is she'll take care of the gifts, and then she'll talk to me and go, "Oh, this is what I did for Christmas for so and so." And so I have like this issue, this insecurity, this resentment with my wife, and I end up taking it out on my kids, you know? But it's that kind of examination that has helped me so much. You know, the book also talks about there's three things, that's self-examination, prayer, and meditation. And I use those things always. Another thing that I do is I do spot check inventories. You know, I don't do like the four-step inventory because I've already done that. But what I do is I do spot check inventories. I look at me and I try to figure out if I'm angry, if I'm have any kind of the seven deadly sins happening, you know, anger, lust, greed, gluttony, you know, there's a couple other I can't remember what they are, but it's just it's changed my life, this program. For me to look at myself and look at my shortcomings has been amazing. Today my food is not, it's not like what it was when I first started.
That's your time, Lydian.
Thank you, I appreciate that. You know, my food plan today is totally different than what it was when I first started out, and that's a whole nother story that deals with medical issues. But I've been able to overcome some medical issues with using food as weighing and measuring my food and changing my food and exercising. And as a result of that, I have been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence. I truly believe that without a doubt. And I want to thank Olivia for asking me to speak, and I want to thank you guys. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Lydian. Please, everyone, give a huge round of applause to our speaker for a wonderful share. And now is the time to ask our speaker questions. So, as we're still recording, we ask that you put your questions into the chat, and I'll read them out loud. You're welcome to message them to me directly, or also I'll turn on set the chat. You can send to everyone too, if that is better.
Lydian, are these timed? Sorry.
No, thank you for asking. Yes, so this will be a 15-minute Q&A section total. So if you can let us know when the 15 minutes is up once we start,
Okay.
but the answers don't need to be timed. Thank you. We ask that you don't come off mute to ask your question or to thank the speaker verbally now, just so that permission to record still stays normal. We will allow up to 15 minutes for questions for our speaker, after which time we'll have sharing until 15 minutes after the hour, and then in our parking lot. So I got one question in the chat so far, or two, but I've got one first, and then I'll go over to you. But Lydian, what do you do each morning as part of your program?
I get up in the morning, and the first thing that I do, though, is I eat. So, and the reason why I do that is because when I get up, you know, I've tried praying and doing prayer to meditation before I eat, and what happens is I fall back asleep. But when I eat, I'm wide awake. So that's the first thing that I do. And after that, what I do is I have several books. I have As Bill Sees It. The AA Daily Reflections. I'm Catholic too, which is a whole nother story. So I have the Daily Missal, and I read the readings for the Sunday that's coming up. And I have what are the books I have? I have another one called Jesus Calling, which is a totally, you know, my thing, my kind of thing. So, and then I just been reading prayer and meditation. It's like a real thin AA approved literature about people that that have that use prayer and meditation in the program and their experience with it. And so what I do is I do those readings, and then I sit quietly for 15 minutes. And my meditation has changed totally. Like when I first started doing it, my wife would be sitting on the laying in the bed sleeping. I'd be on the edge of the bed, and I would be thinking these horrendous thoughts all the whole time I'm doing it. And I go, this cannot be what meditation is, but it's exactly what it is. I hear people say, oh, I can't meditate because my head's too busy, but that's exactly, my head's like that too, and that's exact, I'm the perfect candidate for meditation. So basically what happens for me is I breathe several, seven times, like really deeply. And then what I do is I try to clear my mind. And It never clears totally. It never clears totally. I'll get a thought, I'll think about it for a while, and then I go, oh yeah, I'm meditating. I'm not supposed to think about things. And then I let it go. And I read about this thing in on Facebook, this Buddhist monk, he talked about meditation. And he talks about his mind being like a monkey. And it would chatter, chatter, chatter. And what he would do is he would throw it a banana. And the chatter would go away and it would go get a banana. And then the monkey would come back and start chattering again. So, like probably 10 minutes out of my meditation, I'm throwing bananas, you know, and 5 minutes I'm actually like meditating or my mind's quiet. But anyway, and that's kind of helped me throughout my day too. It's like whenever I'm agitated, I can get back to that peaceful state. And it's a practice. It's me practicing being peaceful and being in contact with that, my concept of higher power. So yeah, that's what I do.
Thank you. And you were mentioning Bell's Cathedral experience. How does that tie into your spiritual awakening?
Okay, yeah, I don't know if I can find it, but anyway, what happened? I usually read it. I have the big book in another room, but he said he goes later on in his story. He goes later on the cathedral experience. It's gonna bug me. Can you hold on 1 second? I'm sorry. Okay, the real significance of my experience, a cathedral experience, burst upon me. For a brief moment, I had needed and wanted God. There had been a humble willingness to have him with me, and he came. But soon the sense of his presence had been blotted out by worldly clamors, mostly those within myself. And so it had been ever since, how blind I had been. And that's exactly what happened for me. Like I told you, you know, I've had that sense of peace all my life, but then I would think about something else, you know, like my obsession, like where's the next party? Where are we going to go eat? You know, or whatever it is, you know, that I'm using to try to fix me. I'm always trying to blot out that peace that I've that is inherent in everybody, I believe, you know, but that's kind of my thing. And but yeah, that's how it ties into my spiritual experience. So.
Thank you. And here I'm going to jump over to a private message I got too. You mentioned being in the HOW program and looking ill. Did you feel like you weren't eating enough or that the program was too strict?
Yeah, I'm not really sure. It could have been a combination of things. It could have been a combination of losing a lot of weight really quickly. It could have been not being used to not having sugar or white flour, you know, because I think that was the first time that I really, really tried to do that. And but I think more importantly, you know, just the ease of somebody recommending something and me going, okay, yeah, I'll do that, you know, to feel better. You know, I mean, I could have went to my HAL OA sponsor and said, hey, I'm feeling bad. What do I do? You know, but you know, I'm always looking for a quick fix. You know, that's for sure. And so I'm not really sure what that was about. You know, but I'm glad I had the experience. That's for sure, without a doubt. You know.
Thank you. And then next one I see is what does daily conscious contact with God look like for you today? How has it changed?
A daily contact for me is usually like phone calls from the guys that I sponsor, and you know, when I call my sponsor, my OA sponsor has me do this AEIOU thing, and I, you know, when I first started doing it, I don't know if you guys are familiar with that, but what you do is you check in your food, you say things that you're grateful for, whether you were had resentments or fear that day. So anyway, I was telling Michael, I go, look, you know, I'm familiar with the big book. That is not in there. I don't know where the hell you got that, but I really don't want to say it, you know. I mean, I do a 10 step at night, you know. I don't have to do this again. And what I did was I just surrendered to it and I started doing it. And that's kind of one of the things that helps me stay in contact with a higher power. I also one thing that's very important for me, and it I felt so weird doing this, but I pray no matter where I am before I eat. I can be at a busting restaurant with a lot of people, and I pray before I eat. And I didn't, and when I did that, I used to feel so weird, but it keeps me in contact with God 3 times a day. I know for a fact, 3 times a day, I'm going to be trying to get in contact with a higher power because I'm going to eat 3 times a day, you know? So I just try to integrate prayer, conscious contact, and food together, you know? I mean, and that's kind of what keeps me going. And then at night, you know, when I retire, I pray it at night, you know? So I kind of bookend the day with prayer. And, you know, I do what it talks about in the book, you know, in the big book. Was I dishonest, self-seeking, resentment, or resentful, or afraid? Is there a secret I kept? Do I need? Do I owe somebody an apology? You know, and then I ask God for direction on what I could do, what corrective actions I can take the next morning. You know, so anyway, that's kind of what I do to keep in contact. Yeah.
And that kind of bleeds into the next question too, is that do you do a nightly review, and what does that look like for you?
Yeah, it's exactly like the big book outlines. It's in there. I think it's step 10, right, Rich? Oh yeah, we read it like every Sunday. So, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Like does that yes. Does that or what does that look like for you, or does it follow the same as what's kind of outlined there?
Yeah, I just get on my knees and my prayer is, was I, you know, I think I go, was I resentful? Was I dishonest? Was I self-seeking or afraid? And I try to analyze that, you know, I try to look at my day and then what'll happen is I'll remember that the next morning and then I take care of it. And then I ask myself, do I owe somebody an apology? And all these things really, you know, is an examination of whether I'm comfortable or not, or whether I have any kind of resentment going on, and asking God for directions to take care of that. And usually it ends up being me calling my sponsor and telling them about what's going on, you know, like, okay, yeah, I did a daily review last night. I'm really pissed off at my wife because of this, and this is what's going on. And I tell them about it. Then I get direction on what to do about it, you know.
Great. Thank you. Connie, where are we at on time?
We have 4:45 left.
Thank you. Any other questions? We also don't have to use the 15. We're just welcoming if there are. Have you ever had an emotional sobriety relapse?
Yes. And you know, it's so funny that you mentioned that because I would hear people share from the podium and they would talk about having like a going on an emotional bender. And I go, yeah, that person probably going to see a therapist or something because I don't think that's in the big book. And then I started going to an AA 12 and 12 book study. And it is all over that. I mean, it's all in that about being sober and having these emotional benders that we go on. And I didn't think that that was happening to me, but it was happening to me all the time, really. And they talk about like having that sometimes we do it because we get a rise out of that feeling. And like arguing with my wife, I felt, you know, that has definitely been something that I would get off on. You know, we would get angry, we would yell at each other, and I think on some level I enjoyed that drama. You know, I just really enjoyed it. So today, what it, you know, like with my wife, you know, if I can just keep my mouth shut long enough, What happens is any kind of issue that I think is going on kind of blows over, you know? But it used to be like I would be right into it, you know? And and like I said, I have tools to deal with those emotional benders that I go on, you know? And they usually, you know, like I had this one resentment against this friend of ours who was living in the house of my mother-in-law with my mother-in-law, and the house was on the Riviera in Santa Barbara, beautiful house. And my mother-in-law was like in her 90s, so I thought that you know, she was he was trying to get into her will or something. Anyway, what happened was I went up there one day and he said, you know, like this is my wife's house too, right? So I'm doing something and he looked at me and he goes, "Oh, we don't do that here." And I go, "Well, wait a minute. You don't really, you know," it just bent me out of shape. I went on this huge, huge resentment and it would come over me in waves. Every time I would think about it, it would just drive me. And it wasn't until I looked at my part and made amends to that man that went away, but it certainly ruled me, you know. I mean, and I really think that that's like an emotional bender for me, you know, when I have unresolved resentments that aren't being dealt with, you know. And I will, you know, and like this humiliation too, that I've had moments in my life where I've been like just totally humiliated, and I have in my head the greatest of Lydian's playlist of humiliations. So I'll think of one and then I'll start thinking about every single thing that happened to me in my life that just but I don't do that anymore today, you know. And I don't know if that answers the question, but I think that it has something to do, those emotional benders have something to do with some kind of guilty pleasure that I get out of either being angry or justified anger or whatever it is, you know, that's keeping me from that peaceful state of mind. So, yeah.
Well, and a little bit of a follow-up of that was, what are your tools for emotional benders?
The tools are self-examination, you know, like reading that spiritual axiom. I always keep that in mind. If I'm disturbed, there's something wrong with me. And I've been able to use that in my relationship with my wife. You know, what happens is, you know, it used to be like my wife would just be bent out of shape about something. And I would be thinking to myself, but I mean, I didn't do anything. And maybe, and, you know, but then I would participate in an argument with her, you know. But what I do
Oh,
now,
that's time.
okay, thank you. But what I do now is I just realize whether it bothers me or not. If it doesn't bother me, I let it go. If it bothers me, I deal with it by talking to my sponsor.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Lydian, for both your share and for answering the questions. I'm gonna go ahead and stop the recording, but please give a big round of applause for Lydian.